Trish and Rob McGregor welcome you to a place where all kinds of phenomena flourish. Here we meet authors, researchers, and investigators of the mysterious, the strange, and of the inexplicable anomalies that surround us. Step out of the everyday world and take a journey into the mystical underground.
If you guys are ready, we'll start in 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Mystical Underground. Thank you for joining us. This is Trish McGregor and
Rob McGregor.
And our producer and tech magician, John Posey, also known as the Mysterious Disembodied Voice. You can go to themysticalunderground.com, where we make regular blog posts and where you can find out more about our books. Among them are the Seven Secrets of Synchronicity, Sensing the Future, The Secrets of Spirit Communication, and Aliens in the Backyard. Our most recent book is called Mind Blowing Synchronicities, The Latest Science Stories and Research. Trisha's most recent novel is Not Quite Human. And Rob's most recent novel is called Pulpas, a story of mysterious beings created through deep meditation. If you're watching us on YouTube, we would appreciate it if you'd take a second to click the like, subscribe, and notification button so you never miss an episode. If you prefer to listen to the show, it's available wherever you listen to podcasts. Please subscribe there.
Okay, our guest today is Tony Arceus Christie. He is an Irish mystic, spiritual teacher, author, and contemporary pioneer of labyrinth healing. He's based in Cork, Ireland, and he describes himself as a messenger of oneness and has spent more than 2 decades working in personal and spiritual development. He is the author of Labyrinth, Your Path to Self-Discovery, and creator of the Labyrinth Wisdom Cards. And his new book, which comes out August 4th, and we're going to be talking about, is called Death, You've Gotta Love It. Uh-oh. Welcome, welcome, Tony.
Yeah, hello, everybody, and thanks, Trish and Rob, for having me here. Yep.
Okay. Sorry, it's so late.
Yeah, it's okay. Yeah, it's all in the mind.
Yeah, all right.
I think.
So your book is designed to take us beyond the fear of death, which is probably the greatest of all fears. In fact, the idea of loving death probably sounds a bit suicidal to most people. So take us off the ledge, Tony. How is loving death a good thing?
Well, it took me 15 years to get to the stage of loving it. So I started off fearing it just like the majority of other people, you know. And it's actually, even though I have death in the title, it's really about life, you know.
Right.
For me, death isn't the opposite of life. It's just a part of life, or it's a transition from one way of life to another. So it's not, certainly not what you might call suicidal. It's actually about enhancing the quality of your life rather than ending it. So, and loving it, it's step-by-step process. You know, I don't think anybody, even I didn't jump from the fear of it straight into the love of it. It was gradual, mainly by educating myself and learning about all different aspects of it, you know, from people who have out-of-body experiences to people who have a death experiences to people who remember past lives or children remember before they were born and so on. So each aspect in the book is a little step towards switching from the fear of it to realizing it's something we're all going to experience. And so we might as well decide that we can choose how we're going to be with it. And I've chosen love.
Yeah. That sounds,
I disappeared again, John. I'm sorry.
I see that. So the typical reaction of impending death for yourself or loved ones is usually anger, denial, fear, grief, and loss. Isn't that a natural reaction, though?
Yes, and I'm going to be speaking here from, I suppose, 2 different levels. I'll be speaking from the human level, which I'm experiencing, but I'm also going to be speaking from maybe a higher level of consciousness. So okay. Depending on which one I'm speaking from or which one you're listening or hearing from, you can either be in the human way of looking at things or just the, you know, the very earthly way of looking at things, or you can look at it from a more spiritual aspect. And so, you know, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross had the book out, and she listed 5 stages of death and dying, you know, which you mentioned, anger and denial and depression and so on. And they are the natural human responses to death, or to death if you see it as an end, or if you see it as something that you have no control over, or that you've had no choice in, or no involvement in. But when you step back from, or if you see yourself as a spiritual being, somebody has chosen to come here, well, then you've also chosen to your way of leaving and your way of dying, and that you've had input into that. Well, most of us choose a few different exit doors, a few options, and depending on how life is going, we decide whether we'll take it or whether we'll hang on for another little bit. And so,
Tony, do we come in with that plan?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Without a doubt. I believe we come in with all our experiences planned in advance. Now, again, if you're looking at it from the human point of view, you might be thinking, and I would probably have said myself, gosh, I didn't choose this, you know, because, you know, if you have lots of traumas or lots of difficult situations in your life, from the human mind, you wouldn't choose them. But we are coming here from a higher consciousness and a higher perspective. And so we drop down into this lower earthly realm where we have the physical body. And we think, a lot of people think and believe that everything that I experience is because of my senses, because of my eyes, my sight or my hearing or my touch. But if you took away all of those, would you still exist? Well, you wouldn't be able to have earthly experiences, but your consciousness or your awareness would still exist. And so it's from that higher state of awareness when really we're looking to advance our state of consciousness. And this is a really tough place to come to do it. You know, it's only the bravest of us come here, by the way. You know, anyone listening, you're very brave to be here.
You better learn to love it.
Yeah. And I believe we come here to choose to love more. So you get things, you decide you'll get all these things thrown at you. When you're in a higher state of awareness, you say, oh yeah, give me the toughest course you can give me, you know, give me the advanced course, you know, and then you come down here and you forget that you chose that. But we chose them to find, as far as possible, or to be able to choose a place of love, because love is the advancement of consciousness, the love for ourselves, love for each other, and love for all of existence. And that's why I put love into the title, Death, You Gotta Love It. If you manage to get to the stage of loving death, you have cracked life. That's my wow. My view. Yeah.
Well, do animals choose? Like,
see, everything is conscious. So animals, plants, the rocks are even conscious, different levels of consciousness or different levels of awareness of their consciousness. So the energy that animals are, or the consciousness that animals are, yes, chooses to come here. You know, and I believe there is only one consciousness here. There is only one consciousness, you know, but it's different levels of awareness, you know. So some people have different levels of awareness, but also animals. I mean, when you look at the advanced species such as dolphins and whales and that, you know, or even some of your family, you know, the family pet, the dog, I mean, they have an amazing abilities, and in some ways are more advanced in consciousness than some humans, you know. The love that a dog can have for their, you know, their, I don't like the word owner, their companion.
They're
human companion.
They're pooper scooper.
Yeah, well, sure. Some humans might have to have that done for them as well.
So Tony, you suggest that death isn't an ending, but a transition. So when we die, where exactly are we transitioning to? And is everybody going to the same place?
No, we're not all going to the same place. You will go to wherever you expect or think that you're going to go. So depending on what that is. So many people, depending on their, often people's religious beliefs, if they believe they just have one life and they're going to meet God or Jesus or Buddha or whoever, well, then that's generally what you will experience. And likewise, if you believe you will experience nothing, the void or the annihilation or whatever it is, well, then initially, that's what you will experience. So if people, now I've had interesting conversation with people who said they believe there'll be nothing, because I ask, what does that look like? Where does nothing exist? And if nothing exists somewhere, well, then it has to be something. So, I don't buy into the nothing things. In all the explorations and meditation and contemplating and discussions I've had on it, that is not an option. But if you experience what appears like nothing, at some stage you may choose to experience differently if you're there for however long you're there. Or we have people helping and watching over us, so they will maybe plant a seed or drop a thought into your consciousness to say, gosh, maybe there's something else here for you rather than what appears to be nothing, you know. So,
well, it's not really nothing if you're aware of it, though, right? I mean,
yes.
if you think there's going to be nothing, and then okay, you're experiencing nothing, but why am I experiencing anything?
and I suppose the nearest you're going to get to is when you're asleep. You know, how much of your sleep are you aware of? But are you nothing or you know? And so death is very like experience in that it's the body. You're not aware generally of the body. Now, obviously, if you're having a dream or a nightmare, your body can physically respond and you can wake up in a panic or in a cold sweat, depending on what's happening to you. But death is somewhat similar, except that you are fully aware that you no longer have the body. Whereas in sleep, oftentimes we're always aware, but our conscious mind is aware, our higher consciousness is aware, but we don't remember, you know. I mean, your dreams are probably one of the best ways of remembering how it might be in the hereafter for you. I don't even call it the afterlife, because that implies that there's some before life or after. There's only a here before, a here now, and a hereafter. Yeah.
And
Just real quick,
I'd never really thought about it in those terms, but yeah, maybe it just depends on how tired you are. how tired are you at the end of your life?
Some people are very tired and they need to go and recuperate in the recuperation zone or whatever it is, and go and have massages for the spirit, you know. So what was that?
I mean,
are we judged?
Are we judged? Or do we judge ourselves?
No. We analyze or we examine how we thought we did against our own parameters that we chose to come and experience. But there's not a judgment as if you're saying, oh, you're condemned to whatever, so many years or certain length of time in a certain punishment zone, for want of a better word. There is no... You see, there's only, we come from a place of love, so love is not going to punish any of us, mm-hmm. you know. So if you believe, and there are accounts of people who believed that they were led, you know, not so good lives, mm-hmm. That there are zones, you know, lower in the lower astral realms where people appear to be stuck, you know, and appear to be maybe continuing on, you know, or that they weren't nice to people, or they weren't nice to themselves, you know, and so that they feel that they deserve some form of lesser way of life in the hereafter.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
But they're not. You're not alone. So you're never alone in life, because we have guides and angels, or whatever you want to call them, or higher consciousness beings working with us. And the same in the afterlife. So even if you haven't had a very productive life not a very nice life, there will be helpers and guides there looking to help you move out or to change your thinking, because it's your thinking that creates your hereafter. And it's not so, you know, where do we go? You go, as I said, I'm repeating myself, you go to where you think you're going to go, and you go to where your thoughts have created for you, or where our collective thoughts have created. So there's lots of collective thought places to go to, depending on, you know, if there's a lot of people think the same thing, well then they're going to, you know, a lot of the traditional heavens, you know, that people go to, or the accounts of death experiences, a lot of the sort of standard ones are, you know, just it's a beautiful place, people are beautiful, the flowers are more vibrant, the streams are singing songs to you, and you know, there's beautiful buildings, and you can just choose to be and experience whatever it is you choose to experience. So, you know, for people who don't really put energy or thought into what it is they want to experience in the hereafter, a lot of that's the environment a lot of people will end up in, and it's wonderful and beautiful. But there's
I was just, you made me remember a conversation I had with a woman who's a teacher and who's also a psychic. I said to her, okay, what happens in the afterlife? She says, well, you walk up to this window. Hi, I'm here. and they show you to a classroom. And if you've been a terrible person, you sit in that classroom indefinitely by yourself. I thought, no, this can't be right. You know, I mean, but that's what, you know, she's a teacher.
Okay. So I have a catch-all phrase that covers everything. If you believe it, then it's true for you.
Okay.
Right. So if you're a very religious person and indoctrinated, you might think, well, you're going to the pearly gates and going to be judged at the pearly gates mm-hmm. to where you're going to go. So you could experience that, right, until you see through it at some point? Or?
Yes. Yes, you could. You could. If you believe this judgment, you see, our thoughts are way more powerful than we acknowledge or are aware of. You know, even here on this earthly realm where the connection between our thoughts and the manifesting is very slow and not always obvious, you know, that what we think creates our reality. But in the hereafter, everything is immediate. So if you cross over expecting to be at the pearly gates and St. Peter there asking you questions whether you deserve to enter or not, well, then that's what you will experience. Then you see, that's why we're here. You know, it's to prompt people to think about what they want to experience and to almost start creating the hereafter that you want to experience, because that's we're a lot more powerful creators than we give ourselves credit for, or we believe that we're able to create. And so it's be careful what you think, because that's what you will get in life and in the hereafter.
A beautiful mammal like a whale, okay, yes. The whale dies. Where does it go? Back to the ocean.
Yeah, you see, the whale is a consciousness. You see, we leave our body. So where do we go, or what are we? You're in energy or an awareness that exists on another level. We exist on another level anyway. You know that only a part of our consciousness comes here to Earth to occupy this body to have the experiences that we're having. So our true being is operating or existing on a much higher level. So when we leave the body, we go back and we merge with our pure essence. Or the same happens with the whale, the whale consciousness. I mean, you know, in Hawaiian, the mythologies, the whales and the dolphins came 200,000 years ago. They were the first to come to Earth to see if it was going to be a nice place for other consciousness beings to come, conscious beings to come here. So the whale leaves its physical body, but the consciousness that the whale is transcends just like we do, transitions just like we do. And I don't know what whales think, but if the whales think they're going to have a lovely whale heaven, sure, that's probably what they would have, you know.
My
daughter
think,
is working with whales, so yeah, right? We were out there, we got to go on a whale tour, and you'd see these incredibly magnificent creatures, you know, and you think, wow.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's just...
Yeah, what are they thinking?
Yeah, exactly.
Probably that land is hell, you know.
yeah, they should, yeah. The water is a lot better.
They don't want to get beached. So with death, are we dealing with a force? Is it a process? Just process, or is it something far more consciousness than we've imagined?
Death has it's part of consciousness, but it has its own awareness, or it has its own place in I suppose mainly in the human realm, because it had its place in how we experience life and the transition. So it is a consciousness, but it's not, has it a personality? Well, we've given it a person. Most people have given it a personality, or humanity has given it a personality. The Grim Reaper, you know, this skeletal, black-hooded figure with a side. But in death, you got to love it. I encourage people to change your view of death, to draw a different view of death, you know, put a smiley face on death maybe, or see death as this beautiful midwife, you know, who's coming here to support and to comfort you and to help you in the transition, because it's the transition is moving from not having a physical body to having, no, from having a physical body to not having a physical body. And that is, you know, because we get so used to the physical reality that we're in, the seeing and hearing even now and touching and smelling, that it appears that this is all that exists, you know, and we don't know, we've forgotten what we truly are, the awareness that we truly are. So death is the energy that helps and supports us in leaving the physical body. And almost all the accounts, you know, from doctors and medical and hospice people is that people die in peace. The majority of people, okay, there are some people who are quite troubled with their life, so they're struggling, or they maybe have fear of, and the fear of death is many different fears. They may have a fear of, you know, the fear of judgment we spoke about, or the fear of not having, if they haven't lived a productive life, or if they haven't lived a very nice life, or if they haven't been nice to people that they regret, well, then they may feel, be afraid to move through the death process. But death itself is a supportive energy to enable us to go through into our next level of existence. So
do you remember your afterlives or your
any of them? I have been to afterlife realms, I suppose, or traveled in meditation and in contemplation and in, you know, practical exercises to go and experience. And it's very thought responsive. So if you are there and you want to go somewhere, you generally just think about going there and you're there. But there are so many different layers and dimensions and vibrational levels that there are barriers, I suppose, between them. So for me, and they can present as different ways to different people. For me, they were presenting as like a thick cloud, and I could pass through some of them, but not pass through others. But then at times, if I was traveling with a guide or a master teacher, as I would call him, they've put in a gender on, that you can move to a higher realm if somebody brings you there. But generally, it's to show you how much more there is for you to experience. And so it's really up to you, I suppose, to, I mean, you know, one of the sort of the Monroe Institute would have a lot of different programs, you know, out of body experience, Robert Monroe, and he would have classified maybe the different levels. And there's one is at focus level 20, which is like the white area, which is the kind of the area, if you want to go and meet deceased loved ones, that's where you go and meet them, you know. So, and you can train or do a course to actually go and learn to communicate with loved ones. There are many different ways of communicating with deceased loved ones. And I speak about some of them in Death You Gotta Love It, you know. So I haven't spent a lot of time exploring my time between lives. I just get a sense that I could do that if I choose to do that, but I'm trying to try to figure out this earthly realm first.
Well, probably smart.
I'm still working on that one.
When came in here.
The cats love the energy. Yeah. When you have the earth figured out, you see it's time to leave. You know, when you have everything figured, you know, you say, okay, I'm out of here. And that's where death comes in and gives you a hand, you know, I say, okay, if you're ready to leave, let's go, you know, we'll go together.
Well, and to loop back around, because I think that actually ended up right where I was about to ask if we could go back to, because talking about, you know, whether you have peace, you know, at the moment of death, if whether you have peace or not, I mean, so is there something to, you know, and to try and keep the question simple, could it be that ghost consciousnesses that feel that they have unfinished business, and so that energy is, you know, stays.
I was just going to go there.
Okay, sorry. All right, awesome. Well, maybe you can ask the question better than I just did.
I think we know what you mean. Yeah. Ghosts are generally the energy, the consciousness of people that has not transitioned or gone through the full death process. So the physical body has died, and ghosts will often result in ghosts, you know, traditional ghosts, you know, they'll appear as the etheric body, the energy body that's just that gives the kind of shape and form to the physical body. So they will appear as that. But if the death has been traumatic, whether a sudden accident or a shot, and the person maybe is not, may not be fully, they may not be aware that the body has died. And so they will continue to behave as if they have a body, even though they don't. And so I suppose I work with the Labyrinth, and at times I would have come across, I use the Labyrinth sometimes to help people transition, or people that were, what do we call them, lost beings or lost souls or whatever, you know, so bring them to the center and help them move to the light, you know, that they're generally, I mean, most ghosts are generally not harmful, you know, they're just a bit confused, they're not aware that they don't have a body. So, you know, if you come across them and if you're able to communicate with them, or even with your intention, tell them, look, yeah, look, your body is gone. You know, you had an accident. And, you know, I've had sort of a young 10-year-old boy who was killed in a car crash, and he didn't realize he was still, you know, rambling through the fields, you know, as with his, you know, with his pet dog, you know, and he thought the dog was gone. Where's my dog? You know, he didn't realize he didn't have a body. So a lot of the time, you know, ghosts, as we think of them, you know, as well, see, they're portrayed in the movie as being harmful or evil. Right. Now, some of them, you know, I work doing energy clearing of houses. So anything, any energies that are, you know, negatively affecting the lives of people living in the houses. And occasionally we'll come across, you know, that somebody who has died in the house, that part of their energy or their spirit or their consciousness is still there. And they might think that there's somebody in their house, or there's someone. I mean, I've had a woman who was pushed out of the bed, you know, and because you know, the previous inhabitant had died, but some of her energy was still in the house. And so, you know, you just do some form of ceremony to help them move on, you know. But oftentimes, as I said already, the person ghosts, oftentimes some of them do know that they're ghosts, but the majority of them don't. You know,
so the next step would be talking about spirits, spirit guides, which are different than ghosts.
For me, spirit guides are higher form of consciousness that are there supporting you in your life's experiences. So we choose to have all these experiences, and depending on how well we're managing them or not, you know, that our spirit guides can point us in the right direction, or point us to, you know, to prompt us to go somewhere where we meet somebody that we're supposed to spend many years of our life with, you know, or prompt us to go someplace, you know, where we've been in a previous existence, but there's still some healing for us to do there, you know. So the spirit guides, see, for me, there is only one consciousness. So the higher consciousnesses will make themselves aware to us through spirit guides or power animals or ascended masters or ETs, or, you know, any channeling that's done. For me, it's generally channeling a higher consciousness, and the consciousness presents itself in a human type form because it's easier for humans to relate to a human type form.
How do ETs fit into this?
ETs are just another aspect of the overall consciousness.
Okay.
So for me, you know, there is many different types of ETs as well. There's a lot more different types of ETs than there are humans. We're getting into interesting territory.
Yeah,
here.
We are.
yeah. So look, my knowing and my experience is that I'm having many different lives all at the same time, you know, so it doesn't seem, you know, that most people will be aware of past lives and reincarnation. And yeah, and we can have past life remembrances, but beyond that's only, they appear like past lives because we're here in it. There's time on this earthly dimension. There's time to make, as if there's a difference between your action and the result of your action, or your thoughts and your thoughts manifesting. But in effect, they're all happening at the same time. So when you shift to a higher level of consciousness, I'm aware that I'm living, that I, some of my past lives are happening at this time, that I have future, I'm aware of future lives that I'm having at this time, and starting to integrate some of the elements and qualities. So when I'm working, I work one-to-one healing with people as well, emotional healing or energy healing with people. And oftentimes one of my future lives will come in temporarily with a practice to assist the person in clearing whatever energy it is they need to clear. And I'm also aware of, seeing as that's where we got onto this, I'm also aware of an extraterrestrial aspect of my consciousness, that I met a 15-foot tall red version of, when I asked who he was, he said, I'm Arceus, which is the middle name that I started using.
About that.
And we touched, you know, our foreheads touched, and there was it was like getting an electric shock. There was a huge exchange of energy between us. And I just knew that this was another aspect of, I suppose, my higher consciousness. I call it my infinite self. And I write a little bit about it in Debt You Gotta Love It, that the infinite being that we are is having many different experiences, but we choose to come to earth and focus mainly on the earthly one. Even though I was listening to a spiritual teacher I spent time with, and she I was kind of a bit shocked with what, not shocked with what she said, but she said that the you is the veil between you and the other yous on the other side of the veil is thinning.
Jeez.
So you will start, part of the human consciousness expanding or advancing is that we're starting to become aware that we're more than just this one physical body, or the consciousness having one physical experience, that we become aware maybe of past lives, future lives and other lives. And so that we begin to realize that I'm not just this physical body, or you're not just this physical body. You're a consciousness that's has chosen to have some experiences this way, but it's also having other experiences in many other different ways.
Does that get confusing, the future lives?
Future, sorry, what did you ask me about the future?
When you experience a future self, does that get confusing? You go,
yes and no. So, for example, I'm aware I'm having a life in Japan 500 years in our time in the future, kanji. And some of it was sometimes I do a standing meditation or allow my body to move, and I found myself doing kind of Tai Chi type movements or martial art type movements. And so where is all this coming from? And so then that's going to be the next book. You'll have to have me back to talk about that next book. Right. Or 200 years in the future in Ethiopia. But these, I call them their gifts, because they bring through ways of being, or I can integrate some of the elements. If I call in the qualities from these lives that I call in to either support myself and what's happening for me, or to support people I'm working with, and call in these energies, or the energies of these. But if I call in too many at a time, it gets a bit confusing. So I need to, you know, I have to focus on this life, basically. Okay. You know,
Tony, is that why most of us don't remember our past lives? I mean, do we intentionally put a block on that? So we focus on this life more? I mean, or somebody else doing it for us?
We choose to have just experiences in this life. And if we remember too much of what happened in the past, we would be bringing in maybe more baggage. So it's like you're starting all over again. I describe it as this is like an army assault course, you know, where you crawl through the muck and under barbed wire and there's climb greasy poles. And so if, but it, depending on how you did the last time, you might sort of go and try a slightly different kind of difficult course the next time. But if you knew exactly what was going to happen and knew exactly how to deal with it, well, what would be the point?
Yeah.
You know, it's really, and I'll repeat myself, and why I put love in the title of this book, it's to choose love. We come from a place of love, but to experience other than, to know, really know what love's like, we have to experience what isn't love. And then we can decide if we want to choose a place of love regardless of what's happening. I'm not saying it's easy. I'm not saying I have it cracked. But more and more, if you can stand back and say, not ask why is this happening to me, but why is this happening for me? Or on what level might I have created this experience? Why would I be creating something, financial difficulties or health issues or, you know, relationship issues, whatever they might be? You know, why would I torture myself as what it might appear like? But that's the human aspect. That's the human mind. And as I said at the start, I can talk from the human mind, or you can hear from the human mind, or you can hear from the higher consciousness that you are. And that you came here to have all these experiences, difficult and all, as some of them are, and choose
Yeah, I think if you've had a pretty bad past life, you might not want to remember it too, because it might be kind of depressing. I don't have a memory of past life, but I've had three psychics pinpoint one particular life in my past, and I don't really like it very much. I was a big landowner in the corner of between France and Spain, and there was a convent on that property, and I didn't like the way the nuns were acting. They were very wild and dancing around, and I was very much against that, so I burned down the convent and killed all the nuns. That's what I was told. I don't have any memory of this, but this is it's an interesting story.
Yeah, and people, a lot of us, me included and other people, we carry some remnants of those previous lives, you know. So yeah. I've come across a lot of people maybe who have throat issues or difficulty speaking or expressing themselves in this life. And oftentimes when I'm working with people, I've found that I can become quite sensitive when I'm switched into people's energies, and I can feel what they're feeling emotionally, but I can feel sometimes physically. And I would say, "Look, can you feel that? Are you getting a tickle in your throat?" Because that's what I would start, you know. And then it'll often straight away I'd go, "Oh, you were hung in a past life, or you had a throat cut in a past life." And so if you've had some physical trauma in a past life, there's still maybe some of the energy of that coming through for you, which may be affecting, you know, people who have, you know, fear of speaking in public, may have been a powerful leader in a past life and were killed because they were leader of the people, or they were the, you know, the shaman or the witch doctor or the priest or whatever, who the person who had the power. They may have been killed because they were powerful and they were able to speak out. And so in this life, they may have a reluctance or not know why they're so scared to speak out or to be seen even, you know, that they're carrying, you know, the traumas of past life. But again, I have a technique for separating out those energies to clear them. See, I believe that the energies of a past life, of this life, are coming here in millions of data streams, you know, to create the reality around us, what I see or what we're hearing here. But the past life ones are very close by, and sometimes there's a little bit of an overlap.
And I have a friend, for instance, who is claustrophobic to the point where she lived in New York in a high rise and used to walk 15 flights of stairs up and down daily to go to work. She's terrified of being in crowds. And I think my personal thought was that it was because she was in a concentration camp in a past life. And I would assume that crowds and, you know, claustrophobia would have been part of that. But she doesn't, you know, she doesn't think that way. So,
yes, you could be 100% right, you know, that there is oftentimes there's always a cause for the effect or what the experience that people are going through, particularly if it's emotional or psychological. There's always something that prompted it. It may be this life, it may have been, you know, locked under the stairs as a child or something, you know, that it may not necessarily be a past life, but oftentimes it can be a past life. So, really, there are people who can help you, help her or help anybody who feels that maybe they're carrying something from a past life, that they just go and seek help. Go to, you know, the past life regressionist or the hypnotherapist who deal in that specific type of work. Yeah. And, you know, okay, maybe it is or maybe it isn't. Maybe you find a reason for it or maybe not, you know. But
yeah,
but
I've never felt any issues really related to that supposed past life that I had. However, when I was young, nuns were very mean to me when I was in school. So, you know, So I thought they picked on me, you know.
It's difficult to know. Sometimes you don't carry anything from previous lives. You know, I don't buy into the karma thing, that there's a balancing act going on. I believe that there's reasons why you choose the experiences you chose, you know, and choose. And, you know, sometimes you see people who are perceived to be doing wrongdoing or evil, that they're actually maybe have been asked by the people to, you know, to play a role in their lives for them, which is, again, a difficult situation, you know. But, you know, that, look, if you look at some of the, the world leaders at the moment, and maybe they're being prompted to test us all to see if we can send them love.
Kind of hard.
Well, if it was easy, you wouldn't be here learning how to do it.
And for what it's worth, Rob, when I was in elementary school, Miss Abrams was not a nun, but definitely ruler to the back of the hand many, many times.
Yeah, right.
We're linked in that life.
So I've heard it said that if we've been around long enough and lived enough past other lives, that we've probably all been tortured to death at some point, which, you know, is, you know,
kind of grim.
Yeah, grim, but it may have, you know, there may be some truth to that.
Yeah. I did a program, gosh, I was trying to think what name it was, where we had to relive our most traumatic death experience.
Yeah.
And I tell you, I was experiencing things I never thought humans would do to another human, you know, with the amount of burnings and peeling skins and hatchets and everything. Yeah, you can use your imagination.
Yeah.
So, I must have chosen to experience that. I'm not sure why. To see if I could love my torturers, maybe, or something. I don't know. But, you know, it is possible. I think I would think most of us will have had hundreds of, you know, life experiences, to experience life from as many different angles as we can, to experience what it's like to be wealthy and healthy and to experience the opposite of it, you know, and to experience the difficulties, you know, where of ill health or handicap or poor financial or being very poor or hungry or starving or, you know, and different genders, different color, different, you know, there's a whole, an amazing amount of different characters that you can decide. It's sometimes I describe it like, you know, if you play a computer game and you decide what character you're going to be, whether it's a car racing game or a fighting game, and you choose, you know, which character you're going to be and what it looks like. And, you know, if it's a fighting game, you choose weapons. Maybe you're fast and agile and you're quick, but the other guy is heavy and he's a bigger gun than you have. And so you choose all the qualities that you have. And that's a bit like, I mean, the computer games and the advancement in technology is actually, for me, showing us a lot more insight into what our life is actually like, what this life is like. Because we choose, you decide you're going to choose this body, you're going to choose the gender or sex that you are, you're going to choose where you live, you're going to choose the abilities you have. And then you come in and you have all these experiences. So, and you know, the computer game, it finishes when you switch it off, when you turn it off. But when you're playing it, you can get quite emotionally involved in it. You know, you can get annoyed with someone shooting at you, or you can get frustrated with how you're going. So it's very much like, you know, if you start switching and start seeing this life as, okay, I've chosen all these experiences. This is I want to say a game, maybe it's too trivial to call it that because it's very traumatic for people. But this is an experience with lots of different things happening for you, and I'm deliberately saying for you, so that you can see and have all these experiences and choose to how you're going to be with them before, during, and after. And so...
All right, you said you'd experience some of your future lives. Do you have the choice to change anything in those future lives?
I never thought about that.
Okay, I was just curious.
That's a good question. I mainly was experiencing them to enhance this life.
Uh-huh.
That's my understanding, you know, so it wasn't necessarily, because somebody asked me, what kind of technology do you have 500 years in the future? I hadn't even thought about that. I haven't thought about that either, you know, maybe I am the technology. Changing it didn't come into the equation for me. It was really bringing in qualities and abilities or practices that are techniques that I could use and share with people to enhance their current life, you know, either to maybe clear some of your energy or raise your vibration and that type of practice, you know.
I can't wait to read your book.
Are you in communication with any spirit guides on a regular basis, like some people are?
Yes, partly. Partly. The form of healing that I have using the labyrinth is called Melchizedek labyrinth healing. And for me, Melchizedek, who was mentioned in the early books of the Bible, holds the consciousness of humanity and is overseeing the advancement of the consciousness of humanity. Uh-huh. So at times I would be aware of his presence. I'm also, now that I'm thinking about it, I have another book written. There's I practice the Kriya Yoga, and there's a lot of masters, they're spiritual beings now, but they were on earth at the time. And one of them was, we sat down for conversation. So there's a book written there that I'm still trying to figure out what to do with, you know. So, yeah, I think we can all, if you can find, you see, I suppose the way to get into communication with anything of a higher vibration is to get as quiet as you can in your mind, you know, meditation or something, even going for a long walk sometimes can be good. But then to sit down and decide or choose, or with your intention, what is it or who is it that you wish to connect with? And if they may, you will need to raise, if they're higher spiritual beings, you will need to raise your vibration. They'll need to drop theirs a bit. So there needs to be a kind of an agreement, you know, for to happen. But your own spirit guides, I mean, some people call them guardian angels, and they speak to their angels all the time, you know, asking for help and support. So you can do that and ask for that help and support at any stage, you know, anything that's happening. So you're not alone in this life, you know, you're not alone living, and you don't die alone either. So that people who might be concerned about dying alone, there's always somebody with you. And oftentimes it's not necessarily your spirit guide who's with you. It's oftentimes it's deceased family members are coming to meet you and to help you transition. You know, and there are accounts in that you got to love it of, you know, if somebody dying in bed, and that they start seeing, oftentimes in the top left-hand corner of the room, they start seeing deceased relatives. There's one story of an Irish priest and his father was dying, and the father sat up, you know, very close to his end. He sat up in the bed and started shaking hands with people that he could see, but nobody else in the room could see.
Wow.
And he was naming them, you know, his brother or his father who had died and his brothers who had passed. And there's even one, you know, more interesting story, a lady in back in the early 1900s, but it was in, she was in hospital after childbirth, and she was dying, you know, complications from childbirth. And but the doctors and matrons and nurses were there around the bed. And she started saying, oh, I can see, oh, there's father, and there's, I think, an aunt, and she identified. And then she got very puzzled, and she said, because she saw her sister there, you know, coming for her. And she said, what's she doing there? But what? She had been ill for quite a number of weeks, and 2 weeks earlier, her sister had passed. But because she was so ill, they didn't tell her. And so she was seeing, so the it kind of dismissed, and there are a number of other stories like that where it dismisses the, you know, it's your mind or it's your imagination or you're hallucinating that's seeing these deceased relatives, because she wouldn't have expected to see her sister. And there's a number of those stories, you know, where people are seeing, didn't know a person has died and the person is there waiting or helping them to cross over. Yeah.
You know, I was with my dad when he died, and at the moment of his death, the room filled with the smell of my mother's perfume. It was overpowering. My sister and I looked at each other and I thought, you smell that? And she says, yeah. That's mom's perfume.
Yeah. And I'm presuming your mom had passed previously.
Yeah, she passed before he did.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. I suppose we consider this as not normal, but, you know, the more you investigate and learn about death and the different aspects of it and the different accounts that people have, it just becomes, you know, that it's, for me, it's acceptable. I just say, oh yeah, why wouldn't they, you know, people who have passed come and help and support you and comfort you, you know, because a lot of times people, you see, death is something we're all going to experience, but it's like there's no training for it. There's no, yeah. You know, you don't learn it in school. There's no college course where you can go, you know, how to have a good death or whatever, you know. And it's almost like don't talk about it, but you're expected to know how to be and how to respond either with the death of a loved one or with your own death, you know, that it's, and so that's part of one of the reasons I wrote that You Gotta Love It, is to give some help or support to people who maybe are slightly looking to face the fear of death, you know, and the more you learn about it, the more, you know, so in my journey of whatever long last 10 or 15 years, You know, I came to, you know, when the first started contemplating my debt came in, I didn't really want to go there, you know, but it just wouldn't go away. So I just started reading, you know, near-death experiences or different books of people's life between lives and all the, I have hundreds of books and all aspects of death. And it's, I have found that, you know, a lot of other people that I've spoken to who have kind of gone down the same road, that they no longer have the fear of death. Or people who have had death experiences, the majority of them say, I'm not afraid to die anymore. Actually,
I was going to mention that because a lot of people who have near-death experiences just say they just don't fear death anymore.
Do people who commit suicide choose that before they come in?
Generally not, no. You choose to have the experiences and see how you get on with it. So, and depending on whatever your state of mind is when you pass, that's how you'll be in the hereafter. So suicide is deliberately, I suppose, leaving before you've completion of the tasks that you set yourself. Now, there's no judgment, you know, but you more than likely will at some stage then decide, okay, I'm going to give that another go, you know, I'm going to have another bash at that, you know. So
you tend to fall off your path or your planned for
we choose our deaths from our higher consciousness, but the suicide is choosing it from a human consciousness. And it's usually choosing it to escape and to try and get away from something, whereas we choose our deaths to move on to something. When we have everything we came here to experience, then we will move on.
And you know, it's I forget where I heard this, but it has been recently where someone was talking about that. More times than not, people that survive suicide attempts, after recovering, will admit that there is a relief there that. So, and in particular, they were talking about some, you know, like in particular people that like jump off bridges and survive, that they about, you know, during the fall, they realize, didn't mean to do that. Jeez. Shouldn't have done that. Yeah. Yeah. And then, and so come to that realization. I wished I knew if there was like a statistic. I'm sure there is. Well, I know there is a number. But how many people have multiple suicide attempts? That just came to mind. I heard that recently, that people that survive those attempts testify that they realized in the process that they had made a mistake. Anyways,
I've heard that too.
Yeah.
Tony, we didn't know about your first book. Tell us about The Labyrinth. What's that about? What's The Labyrinth?
Have you back on for that one?
Yeah. The Labyrinth is an ancient symbol. So the oldest known ones are on rock carvings in Spain, in Italy, in India.
Also, and like behind your head too, right?
Yeah.
On the wall.
This is one of I'm a go right or left. This is one I designed myself based on triple spires at Newgrange. So, oh look, I don't know whether people can see or not. So this is one of the oldest known ones. You know, this is just a hand,
the
finger
life. That's what it looks like.
Yeah, it's like there's one path from the outside to the center.
Okay.
So it's a symbol of your journey in life, or it's a symbol of going to your center. And I use this in a new form of healing that I've developed. There are seven circuits and seven chakras, and there's lots of different aspects of this. And but a lot of people use the labyrinth as a walking meditation. So you will find them in hospital grounds, in church grounds, in public parks, even all over the world. There's thousands of them around the world now. So rock carvings in Arizona and New Mexico as well, you know. So it's almost as if this symbol had a meaning and significance for people down through the ages, and they carved it into rocks, you know, and then it's found in Christian churches all over, different churches around Europe, some ancient Muslim mosque in Pakistan, Hindu temples in India. And so there's a Christianized version. There's a famous one in Chartres Cathedral in France.
Yeah, these two.
Here, it's one of the biggest symbols of the cathedral, it's 40 foot in diameter. And a lot of people, particularly churches, use it, you know, they create them inside or outside the church for people to walk. It's like a walking meditation, but it quietens the mind. So the least it does is you feel more centered and balanced. But I have found it is a very powerful healing energy. Not only if you put them on the land, it helps clear geopathic stress from the land. And I use it by helping people identify. I hold a dowsing rod or divining rod when people are tracing with their finger. And the rod will move at a certain point and they stop at that point. And the rod will keep moving until whatever energy is there that they need to let go of is, or that is being cleared by the labyrinth will be cleared. Or there's new energy coming in for them. So if it was a throat issue, you know, that they'll stop in the throat area of the labyrinth and the energy will come in to support them, whatever healing they need. So, but it can help identify. And I would often, you know, that's where sometimes doing that with people that, you know, past life issues come up or some issues in the current life comes up. But it's almost like that I'm only the man in the middle holding the rod. It's like their consciousness is with the labyrinth is coming together so that they can help identify areas in their life where they have blocks or stuck and then clearing that so that they can have, live a more fulfilled life.
But at the time you're holding the rod.
I'm holding the rod, yeah. And people can be anywhere, you know. This morning I was working with someone in the Netherlands, I think, you know, and could be working with someone in the States or can do it in person or it see, it. I have found, you know, one of the benefits of the COVID and the lockdown was we all went online. And I realized that it didn't matter whether I was sitting in front of the person or whether they were sitting in front of a screen, that I was able to feel some of what they're feeling or, you know, sense what's happening with them. So how does that happen? I don't know. We're all connected, whether we realize it or not, you know, that there's a connection between us all.
Yeah. So you do readings then, Tony?
Not necessarily the reading. I would say I do more healing, you know, to, okay. So if you call that labyrinth a reading, you know, because I can interpret each of the different stops with on the labyrinth and what it means for people so that it can get, they get insights or we clear the energy. And if it's a past life, I have techniques for clearing, you know, past life, energies filtering through into this life as well. So it's kind of a reading, but it's a reading with healing, you know, it's the end result is to enhance people's lives and to help them become more a master of their lives, you know. So I suppose I went through a lot of healing myself over the years, you know, and become, as one of the spiritual healers says to me, you're clear now, you know. So it might have been at the time. I'm not sure how clear I am now.
Can you heal animals like that? Have you ever tried?
I don't heal.
I know you're
the person, even the person I'm working with, they're healing themselves,
right?
You know, so I'm not aware that I have healed animals. I would send people energy or send their animal energy, you know, and you can use this labyrinth healing for cats or dogs or pets as well.
Interesting.
But again, you see, it's not interfering in people's lives or their free will as well, you know, and so animals, you know, they may have chosen to be around for a certain period of time as well, just like we may have chosen how long we're going to be here. So so healing isn't, for me, healing isn't always curing, if you understand the difference.
Right, yeah.
So that healing is enabling people to live a more fulfilled life, but it might not lengthen their life.
What about your labyrinth cards, what do they do?
Where are they? Yeah, because I met the labyrinth 20 years ago and I started using it myself. Initially, I would start walking the labyrinth just looking for peace or looking for guidance or insights into what am I to do next, you know, and I found that I was receiving a lot of wisdom or accessing a lot of wisdom. So if you don't have a labyrinth to walk or a finger labyrinth one, if you have the deck of cards, you can just choose to pick a labyrinth card, and they're all different types of labyrinth, different parts of the labyrinth have different meanings. So each you know, there's one for each of your chakras, for example, and different. So I choose one. Oh, look, here's what, I don't know whether people can see this, and it's called death and rebirth. So the labyrinth is a symbol of death and rebirth.
Okay.
And this is one where It says, leave behind what is, there's a message on each one. Leave behind what is dead for you, give life to what is new. And so there's a little labyrinth. And I ended up doing all the artwork myself, even though I didn't know I could until I started.
Yeah. Now AI can do it in about 10 seconds.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. But it's not half as much fun. Or as rewarding. Yeah. AI can't do a labyrinth yet. It can't do a labyrinth. Yeah. It can't do a labyrinth with one path from the outside to the center. Or at least it couldn't when I tried a few months back. So it can give you a type of maze, which a maze has dead ends and it has choices where the path splits. But the labyrinth is only one path from the outside to the center.
Yeah. And you should ask Yale, Trish.
Yeah, I think I will.
Trish is doing something with a Yale University AI.
Yeah, I don't know how they got my name or number or anything, but they have a new AI and they ask you a question. They say, okay, talk to the AI about these things.
Yeah.
So, okay, then I go on ask about other things too. But it's pretty good. I mean, I've asked astrology questions and it gets it.
Okay.
It knows.
Yeah. So, as I said, I played around with it for a few hours one day, create a labyrinth, an image of a labyrinth that has one path from the outside to the center. And you get this jumble. So it says, no, no divisions, just one path. It's sometimes called unicursal, one path, unicursal path from the outside to the center. And it couldn't, no matter what prompts I gave it, no, maybe my prompts aren't good enough. So listen, please let me know if you can find, if you have an AI that will create
by next week, there will be many of them.
You reckon?
Right, John?
Yeah, I don't know about that. They're not really good. They're not really good at producing data, which would be kind of like ingesting, interpreting, or producing something serialized like that, like a maze would be. So that's good luck. And if Yale's got that, if they cracked the nut on that, we need to know. So,
we'll have them on. Well, Tony, where can people get your book? And now Labyrinth is already out, right?
The Labyrinth is out there, yeah.
Is it on Amazon?
I'm not sure if it's still available on Amazon. It's available on my website, tonymchristy.com. People can find me there. Okay. The book, Debt You Gotta Love It, is available from all major booksellers. You'll find it on Amazon or Barnes & Noble and your local bookshop will order it for you if you wish. It's coming out in a week, 2 weeks' time maybe.
Great.
Looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, everybody's got to die, so you should have a big audience.
Yeah. 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 And die happy, maybe. Yeah.
All right. I had another question for you. Oh, how do people get in touch with you? Through your website?
Yeah, through my website or social media. So you mentioned Labyrinth cards. I post a card on Instagram and Facebook almost every day. Okay. And I would post other little clips or snippets or little comments saying, and please get in touch, drop me a message, through social media or drop me an email to my website. I love hearing from people and reply to everybody at the moment. If I become really famous, I'll have to get AI or something to cancel that thought.
I'll follow you on Instagram and Facebook. You're under just your name, right? Tony Christy?
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
And what? And we'll let you know when we are live with the interview.
Yeah, I'll send you a link.
Oh, yeah. Okay, wonderful. Yeah, looking forward to it. And I'll share it with my following. Yeah, it was wonderful talking with you.
Yeah, that hour went really fast.
It really did.
Started talking.
Meanwhile, I want to tell you, though, my black cat came in here. He heard your voice. And he came in here. He keeps going like this to me. So I had to leave and said, bye, Binks.
All right. We should have brought the cat. I should have brought the cat up with you. You know, the cat's... Cats are very sensitive to energy.
So are
dogs as well, So they'll know whether they want to hang around in energy or not. Yeah. Yeah.
But that one will start typing on the keyboard and messing up too.
Thank you so much, Tony.
Oh, thanks guys.
Take care. Go to sleep now.
Appreciate it. I'll do my best.
Okay.
And hopefully wake up.
Right. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Have a good night.
Yeah, it's all the best though. Bye bye.
Bye now.
Thanks for joining the Mystical Underground. Visit www.themysticalunderground.com for the latest blog post and book info. Subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Podcasts, or your favorite podcast app. Listen to the podcast at podcast.themysticalunderground.com. Follow Trish and Rob on Instagram at Trish and Rob McGregor. Follow us on Twitter at The Mystic Cast. Send email to podcast@themysticalunderground.com. And until next week, thank you for listening and stay mystical.